My name is CJ. I'm grateful for coming at it. Hello, family. My clean date is 10/6/95, and I'm truly grateful. Thank God for the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God for you people in these rooms. You know, I hail from the oldest Narcotics Anonymous group in Texas, the legendary Alive and Kicking. Anyone who is new to Texas, welcome. Our next meeting will be Monday. We have Monday through Friday, 12 noon meetings. If you can stay and make it, please make it if you can. My topic today, this is the men's wrap, so actually I have no topic. Just put some stuff together. Now, if you, I'm grateful that there is another member sharing after me, because I ain't really got no good sex stories or anything to give you. You know, I've been married to the same woman 25 years. And if I did have anything good to tell y'all, I ain't finna say nothing. First of all, I need to ask a question. Has everybody seen my hat? Everybody has seen my hat? I'm gonna take it off then. Yeah. See, I'm original, man. I'm from original Hackner, man. And back in the day, man, when we came to Hackner, we had about three or four clothing changes, man. And you know, we came dressed up and dressed out, you know, man. And you know, it is my dream to be able to go up to New York and go up to Detroit and see them real fellas, you know, man. And so that's my dream. And right now I'm in the big hats and cigar style, even though I don't smoke. So I'm grateful for that. I'm going to read something from the literature. I'm not going to say I'm not a literature thumper. What I will say is I'm not a literature rememberer. I'm not one of those guys that's just going to pump out the literature to you. And I'm glad that they made books so that I could continually open up the book and read the literature for myself at any given time. And I'm one of those type of people, man, that I found for me the early on in recovery, man, that I was one of those type of people, man, that I like pain and I like chaos. You understand me? So I was one of those type of people. Instead of you say, CJ, work the steps. CJ, follow some directions. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to get in some pain. Man, I'm going to do my thing. You know, and I'm going to do this. And next thing I know, CJ is in some pain. You know what I'm saying? And the next thing I know, I'm coming to a meeting and I'm coming to you. And I'm opening up the literature and I'm finding myself in the literature. And I thank God for that, to be able to find yourself in the literature. I'm reading from The Living Clean on page 130, and I'll be going over to 131. It says, the intensity of fellowship is what brings us from our condition as isolated, alienated, and frightened addicts to loving, caring, and sharing members of NA. When we are in the middle of the worst kind of conflict, we may struggle to remember that we are still welcome in meetings, that we still have people whom we can trust and who care for us, and that we are still very much in the middle of the fellowship and of our own recovery process. We learn that when we have a genuine need or concern, almost any member will reach out to help, even if there has been some unpleasant history between us. We start to believe that we are safe. Our spiritual awakening shows in our actions. I'm jumping over to page 131 at the bottom of the paragraph. Our spiritual awakening shows in our actions. We join a group, find a sponsor, take on a service position. We make commitments to show up and take action on a regular basis. We learn new ways to show our gratitude. At the same time, we learn to be accountable. When we make a commitment, we learn to accept responsibility, to stick and stay through the hard parts, to do the best we can, and to ask for help when we need it. We learn our limits through our commitment, try to figure out the responsible way to let go, and to find out it's okay to make mistakes. We learn that adversity, even conflict, is not the end of the story. We may do service for ego to begin with, but we learn through difficulty to be selfless, and that's the goal. We become part of something greater than ourselves. For most of our lives, we were in the business of tearing down. What a joy it is to be part of something that not only saves people's lives, but makes them worth living. I am glad to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, man. When I got to the room of the Narcotics Anonymous, man, I was tore up from the floor up. You know, man, I had been out in the streets for 10 years. And when I got to the room of the Narcotics Anonymous, I had a nickname. My nickname was Roseman. And one of the things that Roseman did was Roseman used to walk the streets of Houston. And I would sell roses down Main Street. You know, but I would sing because I wanted people to come buy my roses from me. And I would sing so loud that the people that would be up in the skyscrapers would come down and say, man, we heard you up in our office. You know, and because I was singing so loud, man, you know, and I sing so beautiful, these people would buy my roses from me. Oh, y'all don't believe I sing beautiful? Huh? I'm going to sing this one to Narcotics Anonymous. Never would have made it. Without Narcotics Anonymous, I never would have made it. So anyway, man, I was out there, man, and I was living a life, man. And I was living a life of degradation. You know, man, I was using to live and living to use, man. And I was just surviving. I didn't have a life. You know, man, I would go out there, man, and I would dance on the street corners, man. I used to dance, too. I danced on the street corners, man, and I'd walk around, and I used to work in the nightclubs. I'd take pictures in the nightclubs. You know, I sold roses in the nightclubs. I sold teddy bears. I'd go to the dollar store, man, and I'd buy stuff and come back out on the streets and sell it. I was always real good at coming up from nothing, you know. But I always had to come up from nothing all the time. All the time, man. And you know, part of my story, man, was that I was adopted when I was first born, man. And I was adopted, man, and the people that adopted me, my father died when I was 5 years old. You know, so I was raised up. I was raised up by a very strong woman. And I understand that it's okay to be raised by a strong woman, but a strong woman is still not a man. I realized that you know, when I have people that work for me, I can tell someone who has not been raised in a atmosphere of a father because they have a problem with accepting authority. They have a problem when someone gives them a command. They have a problem with it. I understand that, man. You understand that, man, because I was raised by a woman, man, but I didn't have that father's love or that father's authority, man. You know, so I was raised up sort of spoiled, you know, and so I was spoiled, man, and I came up, man, and during the course of when I was coming up, man, right after my father died, my neighbor, my next door neighbor, molested me. And I wish this story was one of those good stories where I was molested in a good way, you know, where the babysitter said, come on, CJ, let's do this thing, you know. But no, it didn't happen like that, man. I was not, the neighbor said, let's play a game. And the game that the neighbor played, man, was not a very good game for me, man. And one of the things that has always occurred with me until I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, man, You know, man, I had that stank on me. I had that stank on me, man. I'm gay, man. You know, this guy done did this to me, and nobody else did that to me through the course of my life, man. And if you are gay, that's okay. That's fine. I'm talking about me. I ain't talking about you. You know, and, you know, but it played a part in my mindset. Whenever a woman rejected me, you know, it's because you're funny, you know, man. And they also talk about, man, that anyone knows that when a child has been molested, that child generally enters into sexuality a lot sooner than normal people do. And they enter into sexuality, man, a little bit different. You know, they do some freaky stuff. They do some weird stuff, man. And so, you know, early on in my life, man, I did some sexual stuff, man. I did some sexual, not only with cousins, man. I, at age 14, you know, I used to visit them peep shows, man. And I'd visit them peep shows, and I'd stick my penis through the hole in the side. And I know damn well there wasn't no women on the other side of that wall, man, you know, man. So, you know, I realized, man, that, you know, when I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I had that stank on me, man, you know. And, you know, when I was out there using, man, you know, I got so deep into using, man, and I hated myself so much when I was out there using, man, that I just didn't care what happened to me, man. I know why people walk in front of cars, man. I know why people stand out in front of the street, man, and walk in front of trains. And you be like, why are they doing that, man? I understand why they do that, man. You know, because it's just, the guy talked about dereliction, where you just don't care about yourself no more. You know, I just didn't care about me no more, man. When the gay guy pulled up, man, and said, you need a ride? You know, I jumped in the car. I didn't even ask him for no money. I didn't care about me. I didn't care what happened. You know what I'm saying? But I know that ain't no man to me. To me. My morals and my values consistently beat me up behind that type of stuff. You know, I had a baby mama. And my baby mama, she loved my dirty drawers. She cared about me. She did anything in the world for me, man. And I walked out of that woman's house several times with everything that she had in her house. And still, you know, I would go back and come back to her. And eventually, at one point, man, she packed my stuff up and she drove me to my mama's house and dropped me off. You know, she got rid of a zero. And through the course of that time period, man, when I was out there using, God really blessed her, man. And God blessed her with another man who actually became a hero to her. And when I first met that guy, we had a real problem. You know, we wasn't compatible. We wasn't going to talk with each other, man. He wanted to. He pulled up in a Cadillac and on side of me, man, and said something crazy to me. So, through the course of our early get together, man, we didn't have a real good time, man, with me and my baby mama daddy. That's what I call him, my baby mama daddy. You know, because my baby was calling him daddy. You know, man, but he played an essential part in my recovery, because seemed like every time I was out there getting high, man, it seemed like the dope dealers would be saying stuff like, you know, that guy got his family. He raving his daughter. I mean, they may not have been talking about anybody, but it just seemed like they was talking about me. You know what I'm saying? It seemed like God was getting me, you know, behind that man, man. And I say that for some little further down the line, man, about being a man. I was suffering from all this before I got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, man. I was suffering from not being a father to my child. I was suffering from not being a son to my mother. I had stole from my mother. I had crawled on the floor and stole money out of her purse and helped her look for it. You know, I had done everything, all kind of despicable stuff, man. And by the time I got to the room of Narcotics Anonymous, man, I was sick and tired of being a child. That's what I said when I got to the room of the Narcotics Anonymous. I am tired of being a child. I want to grow up. Man, I was tired, man. I wanted to be a man. And I wanted to do what men do. I wanted to raise a family, man. And I wanted to be able to go to work or have a business. But I didn't know how to do that, man. All I knew how to do was get high. That's it, man. And it talks about it, man. It said at some point, man, we were just existing, man. I was just going through the behavior, man. It wasn't getting high no more. I was addicted to just being out there in the streets, man. I was addicted. I didn't know nothing else. You know, and God in his infinite mercy, he did a thing for me, man. I seen him how he put it together. He put it together, man. My next door neighbor, he ain't been in recovery since. But he was recovering, man. He had 6 months clean. And he said, hey, man, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, a meeting? And so I went to a meeting. When we went to the meeting, it was called a Texas House over there, man. And so we went. I didn't really like it, you know. I had a car at the time, and I told the guy, hey, man, I keep giving my car to the dope dealer. What you think I ought to do about that? And the man say, you might not need a car. And I say, oh, he crazy. I need to get away from him. What he talking about? And, sometime later, man, the little dope dealer took my car. I gave it to him. I gave him the keys, you know. And I ended up not having a car anyway because he tore it up. You know what I'm saying? But trying to get that together, man. My neighbor took me to the police so we could work that out. And on the way back, we stopped at another meeting, man. And we stopped at a meeting, and it was this group called Alive and Kicking. And man, it was on fire, man. They was off the chain, man. Alive and Kicking. I remember the building that Alive and Kicking was in. Because I remember a couple of years I used to go to that building, but it wasn't no meeting back then. It was a buck naked. You know, man, it had a sliding door like you see on TV. Had one of them sliding doors. We got to look through what you want, you know. And man, I remember that place, man, because they used to have an amazing girl in there, man. They used to have this girl who used to take a cigarette, man. And man, she could do some amazing things with a cigarette. You know what I'm saying? Amazing thing. Lay that little thing down there, man. Put that. Wow. Woo. Okay. So I came up in this place, man, and bam, there it was, man. It was alive and kicking, man. And I say that to say this, man, that I'm going to talk about the men of Alive and Kicking, because there was some men in there. You know, man, that was this one guy. He was always talking about had Cadillacs, lost Cadillacs. You know, he talking about had jobs, lost jobs. You know, he shared so flamboyantly, man. And then at the end of it, he tell them newcomer girls, if you stay clean 90 days, I'm going to take you to dinner. And I say, you dirty motherfucker. You dirty motherfucker. And all the newcomer girls would walk outside. Oh, he said he going to take me to dinner. And I said, well, look at this dirty rascal here. You know, part of me saying he's a dirty rascal. Part of me. The other part like, damn, I need to be like that, man. Yeah, shit. You know, man, what I know about being a man in Narcotics Anonymous, we got principles in Narcotics Anonymous, but we got some sick principles, too. You know, we got some people we can want. We can do the positive stuff, or if we want to do something sick, we'll go find a person who like to do sick stuff. You know, so you know, man. Early on in recovery, man. You know, we won't chase newcomer girls and stuff like that, man. I didn't do a whole lot of it. I did do some of it. You know, when I came into recovery, man, one of the problems that I had was I was a multiple relapser, man. Everything that they tell you not to do, I did. You know, they said, CJ, that's my drug of choice, a rock at the bottom of a 40 ounce. I'm all right. You know, guess what? That was a rock at the bottom of a 40 ounce for me. You know, CJ, relationships can be a painful area. They were talking about, you know, those. They weren't talking about just general relationships. They was talking about when I stick my penis off in this girl. You know what I'm saying? And I put it to her real good. You know, and the next thing I see, she with somebody else. You know, and I'm like, I can't understand that. You know, how can she be with somebody else when I put it to her that good? Something ain't right about that. But I couldn't deal with it either. I couldn't deal with it, man. I couldn't deal with it, man. So one of the things that I did was I know what I can do. I'd always go back to I know what I can do. And I started picking them girls up in the streets. Them sisters in their addictions. You know, we call them something else. You know, but they told me to call them sisters in their addiction because that's what they are. You know, and I'm dipping and diving in somebody else's pain when I'm picking up somebody off the street. You know what I'm saying? You know, but I even, in that area, man, because I used to use behind it, you know, when I would pick up a girl, I had to develop some sick principles when I was picking up girls off the street. You know, I say, okay, I'm going to pick you. Look, I ain't for the, you can't smoke in the room. I ain't dropping you back off in nobody's, no dope house. I'm dropping you right back where I found you. You know, so I had them sick principles. So when we come in the room with Narcotics Anonymous talking about we can't follow no principles, shoot, we got some sick principles that we follow when we want to do what we want to do. You know, so why can't we follow the principles that they put forth for us? You know, so finally, man, finally, I got tired of the police pulling behind me. Going, woo, 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 woo. And I stopped doing that. I stopped picking them sisters up in their addiction, man. You know, I stopped diving off into somebody else's pain. You know, but it took a minute, man, and it took me coming in these rooms, man, and getting a sponsor, you know, and telling the sponsor some of the things that were going on with me and telling him the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You know, some people are starting this thing talking about my truth. I don't know. I ain't been doing my truth because my truth got a side of disease with it. If you want my truth, I'm sharing the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You know, so, but because early on in recovery, man, I was still afraid of men because of the things that had happened out to me out there in them streets. You know, I was afraid, or was I, can I say I was afraid of men, or was I afraid of myself? You know what I'm saying? I could say I was afraid of you, but in all actuality, I was just afraid of me. You know what I'm saying? But I started working with the sponsor, man, and he started helping me, man. And I started trusting him, you know. And I saw in him everything that I wanted to be in these rooms. You know, he was a married man. He had a family. He had his own home. And the most important thing to him was his yard. I couldn't understand that. That was just, woo! He used to talk about his grass all the time. Boy, you talk about some peace. How can you get to that point? You know, how can I get to that point? That's what I want to get to. Because my mind is going 100 miles an hour all the time. You know, how you talk about grass? You know? And then he used to say stuff like, I'm comfortable in my own skin. Wow. How can you be comfortable in your own skin? Man. But through the step working process, man, and keep coming back and looking at you men. You know, you men encourage me through the course of my recovery. I've been here 26 years. And it's not just what the men share, but it's how the men live. And I may not always agree with that man that I'm looking at. I may not agree with everything that happens in his life. I may not agree with his sex life. I may not, but there's some things about him that encourage me. And that's what I find in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous when it comes to men. You know, I find someone that who can encourage me to be the type of man that I want to be. Okay? My time is just about up, but I just want to say that today, through the rooms and through the step working process, man, I am close to the kind of man I want to be. You know, you people have given me a life, man, worth living. You know, I have a business. I'm a truck driver. I got my truck driver, my CDL through Narcotics Anonymous. I got my wife through Narcotics Anonymous. Everything good that has ever happened to me has happened to me through Narcotics Anonymous. I've traveled to foreign places through Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm grateful for the men's meetings. You know, I'm grateful for the men's meeting, man. At one point, man, in my recovery, I was having these desires to get me a blowjob. I'm married, but I still got desire to get a blowjob from somewhere. It was just on me, real hot, man. And I ended up going to a men's meeting. And God always got somebody in the meeting for you, man, when you're going through something. You know, and I went to the men's meeting, and the man, he said, man, I just came from the VD clinic, man, but I got gonorrhea. And he got gonorrhea. Yeah, I got gonorrhea from this girl that gave me a blowjob. You know, I'm so grateful for you men to go out there and do some shit that I want to do. You know, because instantly, y'all, after that, I was good. I was good, man. I ain't need to take nothing home to my wife. She crazy. I don't want her kicking. Thank y'all for letting me share.
My name is Carl, and I'm an addict. We're going to keep this thing rolling. The next person up is Nathan. Come on, Nathan.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nathan. I'm a blessed, grateful, recovering addict.
Amen.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
That's cool. Appreciate that. I want to thank God I'm clean today. And if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, welcome. Wherever you're at in this program, welcome. This program is profound. This program still works. Thank you. We still do recover, and still, the only requirement for membership is a desire. Our literature reminds me and addicts like me that with this desire, miraculous things happen. One of the first and foremost miraculous thing that happened to me and addicts like me was the obsession and compulsion to use drugs was lifted. I'm so grateful. I'm one of them addicts that when I got here, before I got here, if nothing else, I recognized something was wrong because I was never satisfied. I always wanted more of what made me feel good. And I wasn't sure what it was that made me feel good. I just wanted something.
Shit. And all my life, I know at some point getting here and after getting distance from the drugs, that something seems to be more concrete in that I wanted freedom. Huh? I wanted, the literature talks about freedom from my self-imposed life sentence. Because here I am now, and I like to thank Hacknut, what is it, 14?
Yeah.
For having me and my friends here. We travel here, we travel a lot, man. I love these guys. Peter, Ron, and a whole bunch of others that came down with, I say that because, like, you know, I'm one of the addicts that I don't feel secure unless I'm within the love of the fellowship.
All right.
I need people who can best understand me. No? So creating this self-imposed life sentence began long before I picked up the drugs. Growing up in childhood, right? You know, building blocks wasn't in place so that I could practice age-appropriate behavior. So as a result, right, I began to compensate for what I felt I was lacking in my personality. Other father figures came, and, like, you know, as a child, I only see what I want to see, right? And they may have exhibited good characteristics and assets, but I didn't gravitate toward that. What I gravitated toward was that they weren't my biological father, and so I needed to practice a way of approval-seeking behavior. So check it out. Listen, I hate saying check it out. These guys came, right? And each one of them had their own, like, flavor. And so one of these guys liked to play chess. And as a result of that, I played chess. Right? Another guy, he was a very, like, spiritual type dude. So I began to try to emulate his spirituality. And as the brothers came, right, I began to try to, like, you know, strive to become more like them. I'm describing my disease. My disease always wants me to get outside myself. So I got here, right? And some of the symptoms of my disease is my intellectual, analytical, philosophical, analytical, esoteric, so full of it. And this program promises addicts like me that I can be free to be myself. Page 4, basic text, right? One aspect of this, of my addiction, was my inability, listen, my inability to deal with life and life on life terms. I used drugs and a combination of drugs to deal with what I thought was a seemingly hostile world. I say that because I'm going to make the comparison here, the analogy. That, like, I got distance from the drugs, and, like, I go through mood and mind altering experiences. And as a result, I use all these symptoms of the disease clean to find a formula that will solve my ultimate problem.
Ooh.
Still here, the ultimate problem, to be myself. And I love the theme of this convention. I love the theme, awakening of the spirit. And I wasn't sure exactly where it was in the literature, because it's important for me to know how to connect that to my experience. And awakening of the spirit, that in and of itself, thank God this is, and thank you, brother. My apologies. Thank you for sharing. Because if nothing else, an awakening of the spirit is what is important most to this addict. Everything else is a gift as a result of this program. Like, some things happened. I got involved. I got a family. I got children. I got, you know, a healthy relationship now. I'm no longer with the children mother. But set aside all those things. The spiritual aspect of this program. So going back, right, some of the things that I recognize, right, that I like to share in this segment is that, like, you know, I wanted to compensate for what I felt I was lacking in my personality, right? And oftentimes, like then and now, I still, right, then and now, I still want to compensate when I go through mood in my ultimate, when I can't have what I want, when the temptation of my disease, my desires seemingly seem unfulfilled. This, that, money, property, and pursuit. I got a disease that says that social acceptability does equal recovery. You've been here for some time. You put in work. What's in it for me? And my disease will have me entertain the thought that these are some of the keys to freedom. Money, property, and prestige, right? Because aside from me being a recovering, I'm human. Listen, step 7, page 35, basic text, 5th edition. None of us, listen, it says none of us are perfectly good or perfectly bad. I am a person with assets and liabilities. Most importantly, I'm human.
Right.
Being human, I am susceptible. Listen, Nathan, you are susceptible to the same symptoms of the disease that made me pick up drugs in the first place. What am I talking about? I'm talking about food. I'm talking about sugar. Talking about just getting over a worldwide pandemic and finding myself having mental intercourse with the TV. While gluttonously having, like, you know, gluttonously shoving stuff down my throat until I go into a state of comatose. So grateful my good brother Peter had offered, like, his services in the virtual form in our part of Brooklyn. And we have those virtual meetings. Right? It further goes to prove that this is a spiritual program. Though I cannot touch these people, still the recognition, right? The recognition reserved for the survivors is still there. This is the type of program where I and addicts like me come here and recognize that, listen, Nathan, if nothing else, you almost killed yourself to get here. You almost killed, because I got a disease that won't say you kill me. I have a disease that say I'll kill me. So I'm grateful that I come to that awareness. Right, that I almost died to get here. But the hit is that, like, recognizing that my disease will say that you failed at even doing that. Recovery says, be, if not nothing else, be grateful that you failed at trying to kill yourself. Why? Because you could have killed the wrong person. Could have missed this opportunity that is afforded to us that is free. And in the basic text, page 10, it goes on to describe how I found and I continuously find myself amongst a very special group of people. You guys are special, it says. And in that paragraph, it says, what makes you special is not how much or how little you have. It's not who my connections are, what I've done in the past. It's not my age, race, sexual identity. What makes us special here? It says in that paragraph is that I suffered and found hope for myself. And come here regularly and let others know if this can work for me, it can work for you. 3/4 of my life wasted in a relentless pursuit of satisfaction of my desires. Squandering my resources, damn near giving up my soul. Nothing to show for that. Grateful to get here. My spirit has become awakening as a result of you guys. And oftentimes, just like when I got here, it was with a hug. The literature says recovery is a contact process, and we lose the fear of touching and being touched. We realize that a simple loving hug can make all the difference in the world when we hurt. We experience real love and real friendship. That's what I have experienced here. Those things has helped contribute to my spiritual development. Even though my disease, right, before I picked up the drugs, and even now, oftentimes will manifest itself in me wanting to get outside myself with sexual exploration. with or without somebody.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
To get outside myself to seek financial stability, emotional security, because I'm disturbed emotional. When my desires go unfulfilled, I just want to explode to the point where I want to slowly commit suicide with the same symptoms of the disease that made me pick up drugs in the first place. I want a page 15 basic text says like personality change became necessary at some point. Change from self-destructive patterns of life, lying, stealing, cheating, right? I remember then and now, listen, then and now, the analogy is clear. I still can find myself degrading myself in my own eyes. Wow. Beautiful occupation I have today. I can pay good money. I put in overtime for more because I believe if I want more, do more. I got some principles that are in place as a result of the step that we take in this program. But nevertheless, my disease says it's not enough. You need more. And when I can't have more, toilet paper, tissue, toothpaste goes home with me. Right? And what's crazy, right? It's funny. It's hilarious until I come back and tell you I lost my job. I do it under a camera, and I justify and rationalize that if I turn the light off, they won't see me. I'm the only one there. I want to share with you how, I am not exempt. 33, work time wise, step 3 talks about, recovery doesn't exempt me from going through painful situations. 8 years clean, my grandmother passed away. I loved her. I confided in her. She supported me in my addiction. And I understand now, looking back in hindsight. Step 12 talks about how increasingly bizarre these behaviors look. She loved me enough to give me her last to see me not on the street, slowly commit. Nothing like getting here, having some people in my life clean, and knowing, beginning to do step work and recognize how destructive this disease is, that I can hurt people clean. This is a step 9 month approach to recovery. That's right. Restitution, restoration, and resolution is called for. And on page 87, reparations. Like, am I truly sorry? This is part of the commitment that I and me and addicts like me make in this program. Because of the damage, the destruction, the despair, the harm that I caused so many people with the disease that says, so what you clean? Look what you did. You caused so many people, literature says, great harm. Wasn't ordinary. But most of all, how could you live with yourself? Most of all. And when I come here, you guys lovingly reassure me and remind me. Members here, before and after, of how far I can go if I stay. One day at a time. For that, I'm truly grateful. I have a beautiful relationship today, which I didn't have then, with my mother. I visit her, and when she's not looking, I wash the dishes and clean the tub, bring her necessities and toiletries. I look forward to this. I cook for my girl, my fiance. I cook for her, I clean, and I'm not even doing it for her. Doing it for me. Huh? It's these glimpses that I get from God of the type of person that I'm striving to be here. The examples the brother talked about. Step 6 says, in addition to my hopes and dreams for my life, I might find in my sponsor, Tyrone G, love you, or in other members, those assets upon which I'm striving to attain for myself. I want to be me. I want to be free. I want to be the closest thing that I was created to be, and I see it here. Yes. I quote little, yes. Wonderful to do it. Yeah, so what, Nathan? What's more persuasive to me and addicts like me is the demonstrations I see coming here. I make a lot of meetings, and I'm not one of them cats that say I don't know about nobody else. Sometimes I make meetings just to know about everybody else. Yeah. I'm not one of those members that's going to say this is just for me. We don't have that type of language in our literature.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a we thing.
That's right.
No. As a man, right? I've learned being here as a man to be responsible, be productive member of society. Step 10 says 103, how and why, how at one point I felt better than or worthless. But here we find the middle ground where our true selves can flourish. I come to see myself as I really am. There was a time when I looked in the mirror, even before the drugs, and I seen what was missing.
Damn.
Come to see myself as I really am. Acceptance of my good qualities and my liabilities. Knowing I can change with the help of a higher power. I'm becoming what I was meant to be. We, I says, we are becoming what we were meant to be all along. Whole human beings. That's all this program offers, and that's enough for me. That's the freedom I've been seeking all my life. Huh? To become more God-reliant and gain more self-respect. No longer feeling superior or inferior to anyone. Realizing in this process that my real value is in being myself. I got people that love me for who I am. And I love me for who I am not. Step 4, page 38. I have stopped being the person I invented.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And found the freedom to be who I am. I like that dude I see in the mirror. You show up. You're good to your father, your friend, your fellow human being. Step 7, step working God, right? Humility is embracing our humaneness. Page 4, basic text. Higher mental and emotional functions such as my conscience. Conscience means my connection to something greater than myself. Step 2 talks about coming here and recognizing addicts stay clean for long periods of time, being compelling proof of the existence of something greater at work. Higher mental and emotional functions such as my conscience and my ability to love was sharply damaged by my use of drugs, by my disease. Living skills reduced to an animalistic level. Garbage cans, abandoned miniums, all that, the capacity to feel human, lost. And I'm talking about even when I got away with stealing the change from my mother. Such a thrill. Back then, cookies was like 2 or 3 cents. They like 10, 25 today. Cookies, just getting away with stealing money to get sugar. Thought it was exciting because I got away with it. On my grandmother's transitioning out right through this, the love of this fellowship, you guys showing up, but still, before then, listening to other members talk about how being responsible, been going to visit her every weekend with my children, playing with her hair. Sitting by her side, page 242, Living Clean talks about service not just being a position in the committee, but a posture of the heart. As simple as opening the door, but as complicated as watching someone through their last stages of life. This is what we do. I've been to many funerals of fellow members and their family members, because this is what we do. This is who we are. I love you guys. I've never seen some of the most beautiful people in the world here come here and freely express myself, or come here and freely admit my mistakes. How about that, Nathan? Huh? There was a time when I used to deviate like I did when I was a child, running wild just to fulfill my desires. Today, I don't do that. I got people who show me how to be faithful in a relationship. I like the way that feels. Step 7, page 73, 63, 64 talks about, in a step working guy, being more forthright. Step 6 says on 58, like when I don't act out of these defects and think that I got, when I do act out of them and think that I got away with something, that it will reverberate within my spirit, causing spiritual impairment.
Wait a minute.
That's a retardation. Clean. I mean, I no longer come here and believe that there's a right way to do something wrong. I no longer come here and believe, right? Because my belief system has changed. I no longer come here and believe that it is socially acceptable to use, not just talking about drugs.
That's right.
I don't give plausible but untrue reasons for my behavior, justifying just as long as I'm not using drugs, it's okay. No. I recognize in the step working process, step 2, page 23, it works out well, says, the longer I stay clean, the more evident, the more evident it becomes that my addiction goes much deeper than the drugs that I use. Wait a minute. Much of my problem still seems to be centered in search of something to make me feel whole. This is why I come back here regularly. The literature talks about to be amongst people who can best. Thank you. I didn't even recognize you. Thank you. The virtual experience is profound. Thank you, Peter. I've been exposed to beautiful people on the screen. Thank you. I make both I don't discriminate like the disease don't. So as recovering addicts, one of the most beautiful things the literature says about us is that as recovering addicts, we come to know gratitude. And as our defects are removed, we become free to be all that we can. We emerge as new individuals with an awareness this is profound literature. We emerge. Emerge is to come up. As new individuals with an awareness of ourselves and our ability to take our place in the world. I've been here for some time. I've seen you guys everywhere making a difference in the world. And our literature reminds me, if I want to make a difference, I could just start with the addict beside me and then just imagine that those acts of kindness are multiplied. This is what I strive for here. This is what I seek here. This is what I find here. I find friendship. I find real love in you guys. And I take my show on the road. And I'm grateful that you guys show me how far I can go if I stay. Real simple. You know, I have a relationship with my children. I'm still proactive in their life. And let me share how, like, you know, a lot of times after I got clean, I had that survivor's guilt that, like, you know, I moved to a nicer neighborhood. I'm no longer with the children's mother. And I feel guilty because of the damage that I caused in that. But that, I don't take on all of that. Step 4 talking about step working got guilt and shame. One real, one not real. Right? Some things I'm responsible for, some I'm not. I don't overreact or underreact to situations like that no more. So I accept personal responsibility to show up for school and stuff like that. I try to help my grandson. Got grandkids. I never planned on being here for 60 years on the planet.
Yeah.
Planned that.
Yeah.
There wasn't in the addict's like log of things, the bucket list. Tony, I love you. Tony from Texas. But nevertheless, these are some of the things, man, that help remind me that I'm clean, that I'm like this thing called recovery is a priceless gift. You know what I mean? Playing with a small child. I'm no longer having sex with my girl, right? The obsession and compulsion just to like have an orgasm is no longer that like serious. I'm making love. And making love doesn't necessarily mean we're in bed. Like, you know, I demonstrate love by doing things that I think she would appreciate me doing. You know what I mean? And I do those things for her and for me. I learned some values in this program. You know? Some values and standards. You know? That's, for me, has been like part of the essence of step 10. You know, values. You know, practicing self-discipline, restraint, right? Resisting, listen, Nathan, resisting the temptation of getting outside myself and seeking satisfaction in a person, place, or thing. No longer believing that my manhood is defined by how much or how little I have. Like I did as a child. Thought like a child, act like a child. No longer believing that my manhood, not talking about the physical, talking about the emotional, right? No longer thinking that my manhood is defined by the unrealistic social standards of society that I, you know, see on the media and stuff. I have to live up to those unrealistic expectations. No longer placing them on myself and others. No longer fantasizing about getting outside myself to get something different, something else. I'm satisfied here. I found contentment here.
Yeah.
Literature talks about step 12, page 117. The spiritual void that I came into this program with is now being, the spiritual void that I felt at the beginning of my recovery is now being replaced by gratitude, unconditional love, and the desire to be of service to God and to others. Undeniably, we experience a spiritual awakening. Yeah. Spiritual awakening, that's what it is. Filling a spiritual void with unconditional love. Gratitude. My gratitude for the gift of recovery becomes the underlying force in all that I do, motivating us, motivating me and those that I meet. My entire outlook has changed. Compared to the spiritual values I hold dear today, concerns such as looking good or amassing material wealth pales in comparison. By accepting this self-appraisal or examination of myself, right? Me and addicts like me come to see that I value my recovery and my relationship with God above all else. So welcome and thank you guys. I appreciate your time, your patience in raising and nurturing me, men. Showing, reaching out and hugging me. One arm for help, one arm to help at any given moment. That exchange in that moment, priceless. Unparalleled. That's the essence of the unparalleled therapeutic value for me. The hug. I don't want much no more today. I'm grateful to be able to travel with my good friends who show so much love to me. God treated me to dinner. For an addict like me, it's the world. Dude rolled me around. Puerto Rico almost killed me. I put my life in your hands. I realize that there's no shame in being an addict today. The only shame is not wanting to do anything about it. Because the only requirement for membership is a desire. So with that, I'd like to thank you guys and I appreciate your time. Thanks for listening.